Hi, I'm Anna.
And I'm Abby.
And we're Beyond Racing.
And we're here with the Skids and Giggles podcast. To our other side of the computer is Bryson and Pascal, the hosts of this podcast.
Well, thank you for this very warm welcome on our own podcast. How's it going tonight?
So far, so good.
Pretty good.
Bryson, how are you doing?
Great to be here, Pascal.
All right. Okay. Well, repeat guest, first time as the Beyond Racing team. Stoked to have this little catch up on the 2022 season. We've had a couple of weeks break after the last couple of races. How's it been going since then?
Pretty good. Pretty cruisy. Bit of a off season, resting a little bit, working a little bit, planning next season a little bit.
I actually worked a lot. In September, I worked like 4-day weeks for like 3 weeks in a row just because I had so many minus hours because I have a fixed hour set that I have to do every month and it just like goes through the entire race season. I'm like, I was there like once in August and once in July and I had minus 211 hours when I got back in September. And then my heart stopped. So I did my best to work up those hours.
All right. Well, do you have a maximum daily hour load that you're allowed to work or can you just show up at 5 in the morning and check out at midnight?
Well, the shop opens at 9 and it closes at 7. So that's like my max work time. But, you know, there's that obligatory half an hour break we're supposed to take, which I never take. And then they just put in the system and then they put me on home office on another day. They give me back the time. So it's legal.
Wait, you don't take a lunch break?
No, I actually don't because I'm really trying to get all the hours in. You know, I call it maximum efficiency. I just eat on the go.
Yeah, I'm on an hourly wage, so I just take really, really short lunch breaks, like 20 minutes or so. I get paid more.
I just always take snacks with me to work and just like stuff that's like quick edible, like stuff, and then I just always like go to my locker real quick, like stuff food in my mouth and then go out to customers and finish chewing on the way. It's quite good.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the 2022 season. You know, we can all cruise over to Roots and Rain and look at the results or, you know, whatever the favorite coverage outlet is for the World Cup and read the results up. So from your perspective, what were kind of the highlights this year?
I could say Anna's highlights and Anna can say mine. I wonder if I get them right. I don't know. I can try.
Okay, what's number one? What do you think number one was?
All right, so Anna's number one highlight has got to be 7th place in Mont Saint Anne.
Wrong.
It's like 2 spots from a podium, dude. Oh, wait. Having a successful season with Beyond Racing.
Oh, that definitely is actually number one. Yeah.
That's mine too. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really good. I'd say my results-based highlight is probably Andorra. Even though, like, I was 8th, which is not as good as 7th, I was closer to the podium time-wise and, like, percentage-wise than I was at any other race.
All right, what was mine?
Okay, besides this successful season with the team, I'm really good at talking. I'm going to say it was probably doing really well at Nationals.
That's like bittersweet it's true. That is probably my most proud race result of this season, but it's like bitter because it was only 0.6 seconds off of the win.
Yeah.
And that just sounds really bad being 0.6 seconds off of national champion. But then again, if you look at Nina at World Champs, it's like also quite bittersweet. So, you know, I think that's like, I don't know. It always means that you can just do better. I guess it's like more of a motivator.
Yeah, and it was your first time at Nationals, and I think it's still an incredible accomplishment, and I'm proud of you.
I'm proud of you.
Oh, no, you.
Hey, Skigglers, it's Pascal. I really hope you enjoy the episode. Before we continue, I just wanted to say a few words about our social and where you guys can find more information about the Skits and Giggles podcast. We are currently most active on Instagram, where you can skid right into our DMs and follow along at Skits and Giggles. And you can find our website with all the relevant links and info under the URL skitsandgiggles.com. Also, if you guys like what we're doing and want to know what's up, just give us a follow on Spotify. Hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen to great podcasts. Have you enjoyed the episode so far? Why don't you share it with your riding buddies? Or just drop us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform. It really helps us grow our show and reach more cool people like you. Right, with all of that out of the way, let's get back to Anna and Abby. There's plenty more cool stuff to come. Enjoy. But you said it both. The highlight was to successfully complete a season as the Beyond Racing team. So let's talk a little bit about the first season as a team. What was the takeaways from this one? I mean, what were your key learnings? How much work is it? How hard is it?
A lot.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. Yeah. But I feel like Anna and I got like a good system of like dividing up the work so that, God, if I was a standalone team manager for a team, that would be like more work than that. Oh gosh, that would be so much work. But it was definitely a lot of organizational work. The timing wasn't great this season. Like, I feel like we could have done better with timing. And I think that's definitely something we are going to take away for the next season, like just to book things at different times, mostly sooner. but I feel like dividing up the tasks between us worked pretty well. Like Anna basically took care of like all of the UCI coordinating stuff. Like she registered us for races, answered all the UCI emails and all that kind of stuff. And I did like the whole financial side where I started like the bank account, registered like with like the authorities and all that fun stuff.
The account manager.
Yeah. And Anna was like the team manager, I guess, like for the UCI side. Yeah. Besides that, we basically always switched off on who booked accommodation at each race. Like we'd always be like, oh, here, I booked for this race. And then the other person would be like, oh, I'll look into booking for the next race. And and we would always like, it was like a system of checks and balances.
Yeah.
It was quite good.
Yeah. And it worked out well because like sometimes I would have more time. Sometimes I'd have more time. So we could like trade off on who like books like what accommodation for what race and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Would you give each other like ratings after booking accommodations? Like this was really not great. 1 star. Must do better next time.
We didn't actually have any real bad ones. Like thinking about it.
MSA was pretty shabby.
MSA?
Yeah, but
no.
That was like the only thing available in the vicinity. Yeah. It was there was like a gummy bear under our bed and like chocolate stains and a very suspicious white stain on the chair.
Oh God, taco sauce. I don't know. But like, it wasn't a bad place. It wasn't ideal because it wasn't on the ground floor, so we always had to like carry everything up a story. But I didn't think it was too bad. Also, it wasn't too far away.
Yeah.
We walked the after party our accommodation, like a 5K hike to the after party, and then like a 5K hike back
on the side of a highway.
On the side of a highway, yeah. Wearing black clothes, black.
Super safe.
Yep, super safe.
Yeah. No, yeah, it wasn't bad. Yep. It was just kind of dirty.
What about in the pits then? How do you guys divvy up the tasks pits-wise?
We had SR Sun Tour actually take our tent to all of the European races and Fort William. Like they brought our pit tent in the van with them, which was super, super cool because that meant we didn't have to throw it in the car. That always just meant that one of us or both of us would go and pick up the tent and like the hardware for it and roll it over to our pit space, just pop up the tent, nail it into the ground. And we'd always do that together. Mostly. We had like some little helpers at some of the races, like friends of ours or like partners or whatever that would help set up the pit space. And we actually always did that together or somebody else did it for us.
What else is involved in having a pit? So you bring your bikes there, you got to wash them off, do a little bit of maintenance.
Yeah, you got to have like work stands in the pit.
Okay.
So chairs are super important because everybody's tired all the time.
Tables,
snacks.
Oh, snacks.
Tools. Mm-hmm. Yeah, tools, and locks.
You're not packing that stuff with you, right? So that's also coming in this or
something? That's stuff we pack.
We bring it with us
in
our car. Yeah. So we bring all that stuff with us. They just brought the tent.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And you guys have a wrench, a mechanic.
We actually had a mechanic at every single race except for in Snowshoe.
And Fort William.
And Fort William.
And Andorra.
Yeah. At every... Oh, and indoor. Every other race, we didn't always have the same mechanic. We always had friends help out or partners help out, aka Anna's boyfriend, OG Alex, the best. Anyways, shout out to Alex at this. he's a really good guy. At the beginning, I wasn't so sure about him, but he's really won over my heart. Anyways, we always had somebody always helping out as a mechanic at every race. In Mont Saint Anne, we had a really cool local mechanic that was from Beaupré, where the race was or something. He was great. His name was Raphael, right?
Picard, yep. It was really good. Yeah. And his mentor, JP, was a World Cup mechanic as well. Not anymore, but he was. And he was helping out Raph, kind of like showing him the ropes. So that was really cool working with them.
Yeah, we definitely had, we must have had like a total of four different mechanics helping us out this season. It was good.
Okay. And did you have any other help, like in getting around, or did you have to organize all that stuff yourself?
We just drove ourselves around.
Anna's my chauffeur.
And I'm hers.
Yeah, no, we mostly drove to all the races in Europe because it was just easiest to bring all of our stuff. Actually, to Léger, we actually took two cars. Val di Sole, we took two cars because it was just so much stuff because we went straight from Léger. And it was just so much stuff that we had to take to Léger and Val di Sole that we ended up taking two cars. Because Anna has a cool VW van and I have a smaller van, a Ford Transit Connect that's given to me by the bike shop I work for. So, And then also the flights over to the US and transportation inside the US and Canada and everything, we had to organize ourselves. Luckily, I had some friends in like Colorado around Nationals that helped me out and drove me up to actually this, a friend of mine, a guy from near where the race was, drove like an hour to pick me up and then drove me an hour and a half up to the race venue, because renting a car in the US at this point was basically impossible because prices were so steep and there was no cars to rent because of the COVID pandemic. They just sold off all the rental cars. So I was very dependent on the help of strangers that are now friends. So I had quite the adventurous trip in the US. And then getting from Colorado all the way over to West Virginia, I had to hitch a ride with a friend and her family because the people I was supposed to drive with got COVID. So I couldn't drive with them and I couldn't get a flight because everything was like screwed up in like the domestic flight system in the US. So 3-day car ride, super last minute with this family. And then my dad got us in West Virginia and then he took off work to drive us all the way to Canada and everything. So that was like super luxurious but before that, it was a bit stressful.
Okay. The last time we spoke, I mean, obviously there was there was earlier in the year and there were still a couple of things that were in the air, chief amongst which I would say the frame. As we've now learned in the meantime, that has resolved itself. So can you talk a little bit about how that came about with the frame sponsor?
We started talking to bikes and I think it was just before Lourdes, something like that. And we signed a contract with them also just before Lourdes or around Lourdes. I'm not quite sure on the timing. I'm sorry about that. Yeah. And then we got the bikes right in between Fort William, or we got them built up right in between Fort William and Vinterberg Dirt Masters Festival, which was like 1 week apart. So we drove from Scotland down to Abby's house. I kept driving to my house, which is in Basel, down to Suolsee, where Intercycle has their headquarters. Picked up the bikes, drove back up to Abby's house. We built the bikes there, did like 3 laps each on Abby's home trails, just like shuttled each other up so we could at least test them out, and then instantly went and did a race on them in Vinterberg, the Dirt Masters Festival. So pretty much we drove from very far up north down to Suolsee back to pretty far up north in Germany. it was a lot of driving. And then we both podiumed on the bike at that race, which was really cool, sharing a podium together.
But besides, okay, side note though, you guys podiumed together, but also you guys look lit. The kit was on fire. And I didn't expect this, but you guys' kit, every time I saw you on social, amazing. where did these designs come from?
Yeah, Anna's quite creative. And she drew out a few things. And we had a few things that we generally liked. Like, we both like tie-dye. We both like certain colors and stuff. And then we just kind of, like, gave all of the things that we really love to... And we both like old race cars. And basically, like, the race flags and stuff like that. We gave those ideas to Unic. And then their designers... gave us a few models that they were pre-designs, and then we basically told them what we liked and what we didn't like, and then we kind of went from there. It went back and forth about two or three times, and then at the end we had some pretty sick kits.
Yeah, because I haven't seen any other teams with such variety and creativity in their kits.
Thank you.
It's usually pretty basic, simple, or the exact same jersey every time out, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe they have a white version and a color version or a black version, but then you guys had totally different designs. It's amazing. I didn't expect any team to be doing this. And then out of the blue, two people. That was kind of the point. Yeah.
That was kind of the point. We were trying to that was something we really wanted, and kind of, it was cool that we could make it happen with Unic as a sponsor, because they have this really cool print ability, I guess. Or the way that they make their jerseys is one of a kind. So yeah, they kind of just really helped us out there.
Yeah, I was super stoked on all the designs and everything. And yeah, I'm really happy with the way our kits turned out. I think we had a lot of fun designing them and planning it all out. And also releasing them was fun. It was also really exciting to wear a new kit every race. It's ooh, it's all fresh. And I don't know, it's just exciting.
There was a lot of planning in that. We were like, oh, when are we going to release which one? Oh, I can't write. Which ones are we going to take with us? Oh, which ones did you bring to the U.S.? Oh, I didn't bring that one. Okay, we're not releasing that one yet, I guess. Yeah.
So it's always it's a topic off the track as well as on the track. What to wear.
What to wear, exactly. Yeah.
All
but
the
time. Are there any fresh kits left over? Are you going to auction them off or hand them out to some youngsters? What's the plan there?
We're actually, the USA Cycling is doing an auction to fund future downhill, the downhill part of USA Cycling. So they're doing an auction at the end of October, and we're giving them some things that they can auction off. A whole bunch of other USA Cycling riders are also sending in things to auction off, so it's not just us. I am going to do a giveaway, but not for kits, and I actually just sorted out an entire bag of biking gear and stuff, and some things from this season that I just didn't end up needing or using, like bike parts or stuff. I'm going to give it to my old high school because they have a kids program there. That's quite cool. And so that's where I usually give my excess things to. But as for the jerseys, they're also a really sentimental thing. It's always hard to give those away. And we're going to give some to some of our sponsors as just an appreciation. But we've already released all the kits. So there's no kit that we have that has not been seen.
Which one is your favorite?
Mine's probably the dark red one. It was supposed to be kind of like tie-dye, but I guess it's more like lightning bolts at the bottom. But I really like dark red, and it just looks so cool.
I think mine's...
Oh, or the white and orange one.
That's what I was going to say, the white and the orange one.
Yeah.
But I also... So I wasn't expecting it, but I also really like the pink and black one because I don't normally normal day-to-day life. I don't wear pink. I'm not a fan of pink, but for some reason, as a kid on the bike, I for some reason love it. Yeah. So I like that one a lot too, but yeah, the orange and white one and the pink one.
Yeah. I also really like the full white one. It's really tricky when to wear it because you literally can't wear it when it's bad weather because there's stains that won't come out. There's just mops that are now forever faded into it.
Okay, well let's talk a little bit about the takeaways and the learnings from this year and what are you going to take into next year? I mean, I assume you're going to continue as the Beyond Racing team. And what were the hardest lessons you had to learn this year for next year?
The hardest things were basically always continuing on as even if we were injured, because there was still a whole team thing to do. Even if one of us was injured, didn't race or something, we always still had team obligations or the tread talk videos to do with Maxis. So we still had to be at races. Even race, and it was basically just going beyond yourself as an individual rider and like more thinking in the team interest. Does that make sense? It wasn't hard to think in the team interest. It was just hard to like, it's not just about you. And it's like, whenever you don't just think about yourself, you have to, even if you're having a bad day, you kind of have to just look beyond it for the bigger cause. That makes sense. I was injured quite a season, so actually that was mostly just me.
I heard you alluding to that. Yeah, but that's the definition of a team, right? And you guys are teammates through and through by that definition.
Fact.
Where's your tough point this past season, Anna?
Me? It was probably in Leo. Well, I mean, like my one injury this season so far was in Leo Gang. Definitely learned from the past to like, even if it's just a minor concussion, to really nurse it and take all the time I need. Cause it's in real, like one thing that, like, I think the most important thing that a lot of people, or at least me, I used to kind of take for granted was my health, especially like brain health, I guess. Because it doesn't, yeah, it's not a given, and it can go away really quickly with a concussion. So it's really important to take the time off after one. So yeah, I took like a week off until I felt better again. I talked to a doctor and he was like, yeah, it's just a minor concussion, just take a week off or whatever. So took that time off, really rested. And yeah, so that was like my, I guess, injury. I'm really lucky that I didn't have any big injuries this season, but
okay. Well, I guess as a sidebar, we have to say it's important that top riders such as yourself and others have certainly as a very visible signal to take concussion seriously this year, taking some significant time out of the sport to properly recover. And I see it as a,
and I think they're setting
as a sign to take it really seriously.
Yeah. And I think people like Tani and Reese are setting a really good example for what, not just in downhill, just what athletes in general need to do after concussion and the time they need to take off. It doesn't matter what level you're at. It doesn't matter if you're just a hobby racer or a professional athlete. If you sustain a head injury, you need to
look after yourself.
Look after yourself. That's, yes. Thank you. Clearly.
All right. You already mentioned Max's tread talk. I cruised through some of the episodes in the last few days. To me, it just looked like a lot of work on top of the regular World Cup schedule. And how was the? I saw that you had a lot of fun doing it. How was it behind the camera and obviously in front of the camera for you, especially Anna? So such a natural in front of the camera.
I am not a natural presenter. I think I did learn a lot, and I do think I improved maybe throughout the season. Felt a bit more comfortable. I had ups and downs, but it was a lot of film. I can't even talk on a podcast. A lot of fun to do. It was a lot of fun to film and to talk to all the riders and ask them funny questions or just stupid things and to see their answers, and but also to like have really honest conversations with them. Stuff like that. I thought it was really fun. It was a lot of work, but all in all, it was a fun experience.
And the general idea was to basically talk through some of the product choices you athletes were making over the weekend, or what was the general promise of the tread talk?
Well, it was basically like pointed at a casual conversation with the top Maxxis athletes racing in World Cups, and like on the side, filtering in some informative things for potential buyer customers or Maxxis fans in general, just to know that what the pros really do, but also see like a very human side and a more fun side of the pros. Relatable. We also did like some games and stuff with mechanics, like also bring some light on the people that never really get interviewed, like the mechanics or random spectators. But yeah, we're actually quite proud of some of the videos we made. We know that some of them aren't as good as they could have been, mostly due to like our trying around with audio. It was our first year doing like vlog type or filming at these race events, and there's always so much outside noise. It's so hard to get a clear audio. I'm pretty sure, like, I would say we got better towards the end of the season. I'd say the snowshoe and MSA ones turned out quite cool. Yeah, we also like edited the whole thing ourselves, so it was a big curve. But it was fun and difficult at the same time. We're a bit sad that it didn't get as much like reach as we were hoping it would, but I think we can still do some things for that in the now in the off season, especially when there's not so much going on. Because I do think it's quite like a cool thing for people to watch. I just don't think a lot of people know about it. Which is also, I mean, we didn't do like the best advertisement. We were also super busy racing. But yeah, maybe we can get on that now in the off season and then get some more people to look at it, because we did put a lot of work into it. Yeah, I think it's actually quite cool.
And are we going to look forward to season two?
We're actually still talking about that. We're thinking about maybe doing like something a little bit that's not as difficult for us to do at World Cups. Maybe we'll do like a different type of media project with Maxis together, but probably not the same we did this year. We're definitely not going to be the one filming and cutting it if we do. Like, if we do it again, we're going to organize a proper videographer to do it so that we don't have to do it on top of race. Racing is such a strain on like head and body. Like mentally and physically, it's just
a lot.
Insane. And then it's a lot. And then just going out and filming on top of that. And then like in the 1 week we do have to recover for the next race, we have to like cut it and edit it and stuff. So
yeah. Plus like in the videos you see some like trackside footage. We filmed all that too.
So we did like track walks and everything. Yeah, it was a lot. We definitely learned where our capacity limits are.
Yeah.
We heard the old tale that, you know, athletes, they make their way up from privateer to pro teams, and then they get to have their shot at, like, full focus on racing, training, recovering, repeat. Maybe for some individuals, it actually aids their whole race craft to be the manager, to be a filmer, producer. Did you ever consider that maybe what you did this season helped elevate your game? Or would you say it maybe wasn't a more of a balance, or it took away from your race craft?
Yeah, I was just going to say, for me, I think especially like having so much freedom in like who we work with and what we do and pretty much everything. We're our own bosses when it comes to the team. I do think that actually helps me. Like, I've had people come up to me and be like, oh, don't you think you'd be so much faster if you just did this, if you just raced full time and didn't like work in winter and do the whole team managing things and just only focused on racing? And honestly, I think if I had more time to train in winter, like if I had the opportunity to go more places and ride my downhill bike more often, maybe, but I don't think, like, I don't know. I kind of think doing the whole team managing thing gave me something to like think about and keep me busy, you know, something to just stress me out a little bit. Cause if you're not stressed out at all, that's also not necessarily good. Like, isn't there a curve of like a stress performance ratio or something like that? I know the listeners can't see my hand, but it's doing like a bell curve. And there's like a little bit of stress is like your peak performance, I think. Don't quote me on this.
Originally we started filming like the videos and stuff on track walk day, but we realized pretty quickly that that was a bit too much. So we always then started filming them after finals to like, just like push that workload to like the end. And that actually worked out quite well. And like I said, when I was injured, having something else to focus on, like, and to keep me like, I don't know, at like a high was actually, yeah, it was good for me because, a little distraction is always nice, because getting too focused into racing is also like a mental strain, you know? I feel like having this freedom makes me not hate biking. Because sometimes it's really, really, it's easy to fall into like, oh, this is something I do for work. This is like good. I don't feel good. Like if I race bad, I feel bad. Obviously, I don't feel great if I have a bad race. But knowing that it's not everything is just kind of like, it's good for my mental health, I'd say. Like not having to, not only having that in life right now. I don't know.
Oh, it certainly helps giving you a little bit of balance, that's for sure.
I definitely agree with that sentiment. I'm also a multifaceted personality. So yes, there's a few things that I really concentrate on, but I always like to have side things that I don't treat as distractions, but more rather like I like to just let them help mold my whatever is going on inside there. So I think altogether it helps pull me through the day.
There are, of course, this is the fall of 22. There's, of course, a couple of big changes on the horizon when it comes to the World Cup for 23. Some of the things we hear is, you know, more professionalization, more elitism, smaller final fields, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What's your opinion on that, as far as you can tell, of course, and what you know?
I can definitely say I'm not stoked about their idea of making smaller finals and cutting down on the amount of men and women to be in the finals because it's already such a low number. I mean, back when I started biking, it used 80 men in the final and 20 women. And they cut that down to 60 men and 15 women. And that's like such a small amount of people that actually get to race final. And I think that scares a lot of potential talent and just a bigger field just away from even trying if you keep cutting down the amount of people that actually get into finals. And I don't think we should be making more smaller. I think we should be making it bigger because mountain biking is growing in the world right now. There's so many more people getting on bikes and it's like spreading. And I don't think that the World Cup should be so incredibly like small. It's just like, I don't even know how to say it, like more elitist. Like mountain biking is not supposed to be an elite sport. I mean, there are elite racers and they're amazing. And like, I mean, we are elite racers, but it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be less people make it better. I think more people would make it better. Like, I don't think they're thinking in the right direction by making it smaller if that's what they end up doing.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree. I think reducing the number of people who make it to finals, like Abby said, really, it just doesn't inspire people to even try and participate. And I think a bigger field allows for more talent to develop and to make racing even more exciting because people actually go and they try and then you might have somebody who you never expected be like really good, but they wouldn't even have tried if it, you know, if the field's smaller. Also, I think a smaller field's going to take away a lot of support from a lot of racers because in the men, it's only top 30 and the women only top 10 or whatever. People, teams aren't going to want to support people who were even, they're not even going to want to support people who might be in, might be out, who it's like 50-50. They're going to want to support the top racers and the top racers only. And I think that's a shame.
So maybe to lighten the mood, I guess one of the key storylines from last year has been the crossing of borders and smuggling of pets. So I guess one of the questions we have to answer today is, was there a follow-up in 2022?
So there was one fun situation. We didn't acquire any pets, but we did smuggle one pet. It was a dog that looks like a doe and taller. And he was actually one of our favorite mechanics, our favorite World Cup mechanics dog. And the problem was that on the ferry over to William, apparently because of Brexit, truck drivers were not allowed to take dogs. And he was in a huge truck. And he had just seen us like right behind or like right next to him or something, line queuing up to drive onto the ferry. And we were like waved frantically. We're like, oh my gosh, hi, right? Anyways, Anna and I did our thing, checked into the ferry, went through border control there because you had to like give your passports and everything because that ferry was the UK border or the Netherlands border because we hopped on in Amsterdam. We were already on the ferry, just got everything out of the car, ready to go up to our room. Then we get a call from this mechanic and he's like, guys, are you already on the ferry? I need help. They won't let me on the ferry with my dog. And he was alone in the truck, so he couldn't have anybody else take the dog. And we were like, oh my gosh, we have to help him. Anna and I like triggered like the rescue sense in our head. And then we walked out of the loading dock, like where they load all the cars up. We just walked out of like the drive up, and everyone like was like all of the people were like yelling at us, like, you can't walk here. And we're just like walking across.
Like, they said we could.
This huge open area, all the way up to like the front where we had already checked in. And then, like, we were going to cross to go find the dog because they had to park somewhere outside of, like, the loading area. And then they, like, stopped us. They're like, oh, give us your passports. We have to, unsign you across the border because we, like, crossed back over the border. So they had to, like, take our like, cards and everything again. It was stressful. Anyways, then we went and got the dog from our guy. And he was like in like a hectic to get back on the ferry because like it was already like loading time. He then like hopped in his truck, drove back into the sign up thing. We walked over there. Then they were like, oh no, you have to go through the walking area. We were afraid we were going to miss the ferry because we had to walk all the way back around the whole area into this, the walk on. And they were like, what are you doing here? You have a car pass. We're like, okay, so we already were in, our car's in there, but we had to come get this dog. And apparently, people had like radioed around that this dog was like an issue and like all that. So then we had to give them the doggy passport. We had to get our tickets reprinted. We had to pay for dog boarding. Then they like had to scan the dog for like the chip and stuff. And she like asked me like, where's the chip? And I'm like, I don't know. It's not my dog. And then, where is it usually? And she's like around the neck. And I was like, all right. So I just like checked the whole neck and eventually it like beeped. Then we kept going. This dog was so cute, so loving, but so hard to contain around other dogs. Mm. It was like, he was a little bit pulley, but then everybody loved him. So nobody was really mad about it. Eventually we got to the security, went across the border again, walked onto the ship, found the dog hotel. And then we just chilled outside with the dog on like the special doggy deck where they had like litter boxes for dogs. It stunk so bad. Yeah. And then we just chilled there, waited for a mechanic friend. But that wasn't the smuggling part, actually. I completely forgot that we were talking about smuggling. Anna, you want to talk about the smuggling part?
I'm not as good of a storyteller, so I'll let you do it.
Oh gosh, okay. I'll keep it short. Okay. So overnight ferry ride. I think it was like what, 10 hours in the ferry?
It
was like 16 hours in the ferry. Anna and I bought some wine, we bought some fudge, we had a good time. I was just chilling at the bottom, and the mechanic guy had the dog. Quick thing about that is we got a room upgrade because mechanic guy wanted a dog compatible room. So, and then we ended up getting his. It was like a 4-person room with a little window. So it was super cool for free. Then on the way back out, we had to go grab the dog. Then we went down to the car, realized the entire back of the car was filled full of stuff. There was nowhere for the dog. So Anna was driving, and we had to like drive out, and we put the dog, or more like at my feet, because she has like a VW bus. So it had like a lot of foot space. So mid-sized dog, you know, not quite a big dog, but not a small dog. Big dog,
he's
actually.
Pretty big.
He's a big boy. He's a big boy, yeah. His name's Kitsune, by the way. He was down by my feet, and we like drove off, and I was like, oh gosh, I hope we don't have the like controls or anything. We roll out, nobody sees him, and then we get in line and we're like, what is this line for? And it was for the border, the UK border. So what ended up happening is because dogs have to be in kennels strapped down, like secured or strapped in some type of way so that they don't get injured in an accident, which makes complete sense, but we didn't have this possibility. So Kitsune was like laying at my feet and I was like, and I was like, stay down, you know, kept trying to calm and everything. We like turned on the foot ventilation so he wasn't getting too warm and everything. Eventually we got up to the window and Anna like had her arm on the side of the window like seeing, and I was like leaned over so that he didn't pop up or anything. And like it was, and then they, and the thing is, we did have a passport for the dog, but we knew if we told her dog, she would want to know her, where he was. And so we couldn't do that. We had to keep him a secret because we didn't want to get fined or stopped or not let into the country. So
banned from the UK.
This was not an option. So and we like both like leaned over. Kitsune, for some reason, was like so calm for those 3 to 4 minutes that this person was talking to us at the border control. But like we were also lucky because we had a little bit higher van, so they couldn't really see in because they were like seated. She like this person, it was a woman, right?
I don't remember.
She asked us like, is it just you traveling?
And we're like,
yep, just us. And I think she kept asking questions because we were so weird.
Yeah.
Anyways, we ended up getting, she was like, okay, and then gives us our passports back. We drive off. Like right after we drove off, then Kitsu like popped his head up and I was like, oh my gosh. But we were just like gone and we were like, don't stop now. Just keep
going. Turn back. Yeah.
So we just kept going until we found like this shop where we could finally like stop, let him out, let him go pee and stuff. And then wait for our mechanic boy to come grab his doggo.
What a story.
Yeah. Sorry, it took longer than I expected. It was quite fun though.
Oh, absolutely.
On the way back, he wasn't alone in the truck though, so his mechanic buddy could take the dog on the walk-in and he could drive the truck, so we weren't needed as a rescue on the way back.
They did get us a really nice dinner though.
Oh, we had great dinner. Yeah, we ended up being on the same ferry as them on the way back too, which is great because like what are the odds, right? And then we had great dinner.
I have like little flashback questions because what I did was I did a little bit of research and I listened to the old podcasts and really surprised myself about myself. But anyways, I came up with some small things that I want to like just kind of like recap on since we've talked, because it's been a while since we talked to either of you separately. And some things I took away was, Anna, you had some goals for the 22 season, which were becoming stronger, improving your jump skill, and becoming more consistent. So I just wanted to come back and see where you got with that.
So this is the first season that I like didn't lose a significant amount of weight and strength, which I'm very happy about. Again, I think a lot of that has to do with working with Jarrett and just really staying on it and really trying to keep my strength up. Because, again, I've also had problems in the past with, like, losing weight throughout the season and losing a lot of strength and stuff. So, yeah, I'm happy to report. I lost, like, maybe 2 kilos, but not a lot. I was able to keep my weight, like, up more than I ever have before in the past through a whole season. My jump skills, honestly, I think they're not bad. They're like, okay, I still have no stees or anything. I can do a hi mom. Just take one hand off and hi mom. But I think some of the issues I was having with jumping may have had to do with the bike I was riding beforehand, because now I feel a lot more comfortable in the air on the new bike. And I had a very consistent season as well, which was really good. I'm happy about, but it's also, consistency can be kind of frustrating because like I want to improve. But compared to like, it's weird. I don't know. I think compared to last, like if I would have had this season last year, I would have been super stoked. But now I'm like I want to improve. My new goal is to improve and not just be consistent.
How about you, Abby? Are there some big improvements or things that you're really happy with how you've come with in 22?
I had quite a difficult season because basically I feel like I raced almost every race injured. Except for Luad and National Champs and Snowshoe. I'd say those were like the three races where I wasn't injured. And in Luad, I started out the season with a really, really good run. I felt great on that track and everything, but I ended up catching up to the girl in front of me. And I ended up not qualifying by 1.5 seconds. So it was super frustrating. Like, I knew the speed was there. And then unfortunately, like the second race, I broke my wrist, and then it was like not diagnosed correctly. So then I raced like Fort William with a broken wrist and Vinterberg with a broken wrist and everything. And then eventually, like, and then I took a break, got it like fixed and everything. Then I like went back after 6 weeks of not being on the bike, raced Lenzerheide, didn't qualify there. And it was kind of like, it was a little bit frustrating, kind of like a lot of the same stuff as last year. But then I realized, like, as soon as I was like up and running again, like my body was healed for national champs and snowshoe, I had good races. Like, I had a great national championship. I had a good race at snowshoe, ended up 12th then again in Mont Saint-Anne. I was 12th last year in snowshoe too, but I feel like this year my 12th was better because it was more people racing. So like, I feel better about my placement this year. So I know that I improved from last year, but I know that I didn't have that great physical condition this season due to injury. Like, I felt strong. But yeah, I was a bit unlucky in that. So I dislocated my shoulder at World Champs. And like right before that in Mont Saint-Anne, I had like a huge crash onto my shoulder too. So like both times my shoulder was like super weak. And then I ended up not racing. I had to pull out because the track was just too much for my shoulder. So I did finish the season, I'd say. So that's, I mean, I'm happy about that. I improved from last year, and I didn't lose weight, like neither. My body's very weird about that. It just stays. I just want to keep improving because I know the speed is there, and I'm kind of frustrated. Something always keeps stopping me from like going full speed into a race season, like a World Cup season. And I know that I could be better than I am. And I just want to keep working at that. And I also have this feeling that I just now at this point, I just need to prove something to myself. Like, it's kind of annoying, but kind of very motivating.
Super simple yes, no. Would you say that this season was better than last season?
Yeah.
And from that, or based on that, aside from the points or the fact that you were becoming injured, kind of, let's say, semi-regularly, did you see any patterns develop in your racing that you think might have triggered the more successful times that you saw?
Basically, the pattern was just being able to hold on. As soon as I could ride a bike without pain and without like having to give in to a weak body, it was great. As soon as I could just ride, I had good races. Yeah.
Okay. Anna, any patterns you saw in your racing, like the racing itself, that kind of like told you like, aha, this is where I've been improving since last year?
I think my mental game improved a lot since last year. Especially at the beginning of the last year, it was like my mental game regarding racing was not very good. Like, I was going into every race telling myself that I wasn't going to do well, which obviously if you tell yourself you're not going to do well, you're not going to do very well. So I think that improved significantly this year. And I think, my race results kind of reflected on that.
You were doing mindset development tricks or, trainings, or what was the cause behind that?
Honestly, I think I think something Abby told me actually was like a switch, I guess, that kind of flipped for me. It was last season, but she told me like that if I keep, like, it doesn't matter if I, because the reason why I kept telling myself that I was going to do bad is to save myself from disappointment. But then she told me that like, I'm going to be disappointed anyways if I do bad, no matter if I tell myself that I can do good or not, you know, no matter like how I guess, talk to myself, if that makes sense, you know?
Exactly. Actually, I know very well because you beat me to my next question.
Oh.
It was, what did you guys learn from each other? So maybe Abby, you go ahead, and what's maybe one thing that you've learned through Anna being on Beyond Racing?
I learned that rituals before racing are important to me. Like, I guess, okay, I might have been infected by anesthesia a little bit, but like, we basically always have the same pre-race warm up. And even if one of us, like me, even if I was finals, I always like went up the mountain with her though. And we did like our reaction, games before each race run, because it was just like, I feel like even if I wasn't racing, it was like super important to me. They did the same thing as like every race, just because it helps. And it's, it loosens up the mood right before it, because our reaction games are like also, but also hard. Yeah, so rituals became really important to me. Knocking on wood before you leave the start house. Every time, no, like I used to knock on wood like whenever I said something I didn't want to happen, right? So like I've always been knocking on wood, but every time Anna started in front of me or like rolled out of the start gate in front of me, she'd knock on the wood on the side right before she went, and then my hand just started doing that because it was less like knock, knock, knock. And so yeah, I learned that that's important to me. I learned that I can be happy for someone even if they're my opponent, but I've already known that for a long time.
Apart from the pre-race rituals and the teammanship, or what do you want to call it? What about nail color? Was that also part of the...
Painted her toenails.
So Anna painted my toenails. Not a big fingernail painter myself, but I did let her paint my toenails for world champs.
Red, white, and blue?
Red. I'm already white.
And your headphones are blue.
There you go.
Anna, are you still doing the nail thing?
Oh, yeah. That's still a very... in snowshoe, I made... Or Abby's dad had to go get me nail polish because I forgot to bring any. And I was... There was, like, none in snowshoe anywhere. I was like, oh, no. What am I going to do? Like, I'm going to die at this race if I don't.
Like, oh, God.
Yeah. So, fun fact. I might be kind of superstitious. I might have passed some of those superstitions on to Abby. The knocking on wood before we go. But yeah, the rituals are definitely for me also a big part. Like at the races where Abby wasn't there, I was like, oh no, what am I gonna do without her?
Oh, I also just learned to let somebody else eat sometimes, like that not everything has to be in my control to work out. Like with the whole team management thing, just like trusting Anna to like do her part and do it well and not have to like double check anything, or because I'm really bad at giving like every time I have group project at uni, I basically end up just doing everything myself because I'm so worried that whenever somebody else puts their hand in it, they'll mess it up. So with Anna, it was just kind of like, oh, can you send this sponsor this email? And then it was like, she was like, yep, got it. And then it was like out of sight, out of mind. And then at like some point a few weeks later, I was like, oh, did you send that email? She's like, yeah. And I was like,
it's like, oh, wait, like, what email? Uh-oh.
Nah, that never happens.
No.
No. Just sometimes. Okay. It's actually quite good. Like, just learning to also, like, trust somebody else to organize things, and also organize things that have, like, have things to do with me that, like, directly affect me. Trust.
Is there anything else you guys wanted to say before we wrap it up?
Shout out to everybody this season, especially Elliot.
Oh,
Jackson.
Yeah.
What a G. And all of our sponsors that believed in us and us believing in ourselves. Big thank you to myself.
Big thanks to Abby.
It's hard. It's hard thing, like starting something new from nothing and like having to like learn the ropes of something new. And I'm just like, thanks that we did.
Well, I guess with that, we, wrap it up for the night. Thank you guys very much for your time. It was very entertaining as always.
Thanks for having us.
And
gracias.
Pleasure. Anytime.
Hey, pleasure.
Reclaim the title of the official Beyond Racing podcast channel. And we'll hopefully see you guys out on the trail soon.
Yeah, see you around.
Thanks for listening. We really hope you enjoyed this episode.
Pascal and I put a lot of heart and soul into this podcast, and it means a lot to us that you've listened to it. We'd also really appreciate if you shared it with the people that you know and care about. Until next time, Skigglers.